Everybody likes to go out to eat. But do we ever stop and think what happens behind the kitchen doors? Who are the people making the stuff? Who are the people suppliers? Who are the vendors? Who are the people putting on the party that we enjoy so much today here? We're going to take a real dive down on one of those specialty vendors here today with the man who knows them all, Pascal. Chef Pascal, welcome, sir.
Oh, thank you, Paul. I'm very excited about our show today and to know more about my friend, Marco. Marco de Molina. Very interesting life and journey, and we're mostly going to talk about mezcal.
Mm-hmm.
Mezcal.
Yeah, it was Chef Pascal Mezcal. It rhymes today here. I don't know. Yeah. Pascal's Mezcal.
Pascal Mezcal.
Well, maybe we'll do an edition like
brand.
That. That's the next edition.
Yeah, exactly.
So I did some research, of course, because everybody knows about tequila.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And tequila. And did some research, what's the difference between tequila and mezcal? Mm-hmm. And I got some answers, but maybe you're going to tell us a little bit more. So your mezcal is called One of Us.
One of Us.
Why that name?
Well,
get ready for a story, folks, because this guy is a storyteller. I saw him do this in an event. We could go an hour on his story here. All right.
we'll start with the first of all, Chef Pascal and Paul, thank you so much for having us.
You're
having
welcome.
One of us in your show is very special. We like to say that mezcal is the sophisticated cousin of tequila, but we'll get into why is the difference, and then because some people believe that tequila is mezcal or mezcal is tequila, or someone is like, we'll clarify that. But
sure.
To answer your question, One of Us, we started this project, my wife and I, in 2022. It was a very big year for us.
Your wife Rosa.
My wife Rosa, yes. She's Ukrainian. I'm from Mexico originally. And 2022 was a big year for us. We got nominated for a Grammy. We worked on a really big...
Why you got nominated for a Grammy?
We did a music video for an artist called...
Because that's your side job, huh?
That's his little side gig.
Sounds like
he's not making mezcal, he's making movies, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. right now, you know, our beloved entertainment industry is going through some winds of change. And while that industry is adjusting, Rosa that year... this is before the industry went into this, but if we follow the story, is that 2022 was a big year. We worked on this big TV show as well.
What was the music video? Somebody wants to know already. You got nominated for a Grammy for it. It was kind of controversial.
Yes, we did. We produced Little Nas X video, Montero, Call Me By Your Name. So we broke the internet, you know, and then that gave us a Grammy nomination. We served as executive producers on El Rey, The Life of Vicente Fernandez, a big mariachi singer from Mexico, then a show for Netflix. But also that's the year that Russia invaded Ukraine,
and then it
sent Rosa on a big spiral of what's next. Yeah. So instead of being fully devastated, which she was, and we were, you know, trying to figure out how to get our family out of the danger. Rosa, at 21, she became the pillar of her family, both financially and emotionally. So she went in a spiral of thinking bigger, brighter, longer, and what's next. And I remember by the end of 2022, I was coming back from a production, needless to say, Rosa and I, we also work as producers together in our entertainment company. So I was coming back. And
what's the name of the company? If somebody wants to hire you to do a music video or a Netflix special, you
right.
Never know, Chef Pascal. He's always talking about this.
You know? Chef cooking show.
Yeah. It's our production company is called Space Brain Entertainment, so spacebrain.com. And where clearly Rosa is, I'm the space, and Rosa is the brain, right?
Go.
But yeah, I was coming back from a production, and Rosa sat me down, and she's like, "Sit down, we need to talk." And when your wife tells you that, two mm-hmm. things are going to happen. Mm-hmm. She's either leaving you or you're having a baby, right? So that's when she pitched me. We were starting a mezcal brand, and I had no idea that she spent about 5-6 months researching the world of what's next. And there's a when we met, Rosa never really drank, and I introduced her to spirits, and I'm very passionate about craftsmanship. So yeah. I taught her about like how I thought about tequila, and then mezcal, and then about cigars.
What did you know about mezcal and tequila?
Growing up from Mexico, you know, I really enjoy spirits. I've always been a nerd. Mm-hmm. And then I approached filmmaking from a sense of why. Like, I need to have an answer to everything. And then cigars, and I'm a watch collector, and then motorcycles, and then, like, I'm very involved. So I told her, like, I shared with her my passion for mm-hmm. craftsmanship, yeah. the passion of design and everything. And then
in Mexico, did you try to make your own?
Like, no, never. No, people think that we come from a family of alcohol, yeah. or money for that matter, and then Rose and I were polar opposites. You know, we're self-made, yeah. We come from very humble backgrounds. And
so I'm very curious, because as a chef, I'd like to know how, okay, you have several passions, how your passion become a maker mm-hmm. of a spirit. And because if you didn't know the making, now I know you have some maestros. I mean, maestro is like a winemaker of the tequila, how did you start thinking?
Yes, it's very cool, because yes, Rosa sat me down and then she pitched me the whole thing, because mezcal reminded her of uzbar, a Ukrainian beverage that is made of roasted pears and everything. So she was very passionate about it, and she identified that there's a problem in a gap in the market where popular brands are just very, you know, celebrity backed or fancy packaging, millions of dollars in marketing, but the juice not necessarily meets anymore the quality that you expect. Mm-hmm. Tequila stopped tasting like tequila to me, like the way I grew up tasting tequila a long time ago. Meanwhile, there's the brands that really care mm-hmm. for craftsmanship and are clean products. They don't come in the aesthetic that will appeal to the luxury, the quiet luxury customers. So this is the gap that we found in the market, the problem that we saw, and then we created the Mezcal.
And was she attracted by the phenomenal growth of tequila, which is having a moment? We've seen the George Clooney story and brands like that suddenly emerge and sell for billions of dollars and all this. It wasn't that long ago that tequila was not a front and center brand. It was vodka. It was other things. Tequila had its moment. It seems like mezcal would soon to follow, because we'll talk about the difference.
Well, especially because we're in Southern California, too.
Yes.
Yes. That was part also of her presentation when she pitched it to me. She saw she researched the trends in the market and what's happening in the world of spirits, because it also needed to make sense as a business. Mm-hmm. So we opened 2023, and, you know, Rosa said, you know what, the only way to figure this out is, like, here's your backpack, your sandwich, and your plane ticket. And she flew me to Oaxaca, Mexico to on a quest, not to find the best mezcal, but to find the ultimate maestro mezcalero, the master distiller.
And is it the same from beginning to now?
Huh?
Is it the same when you found this guy? Is it the same guy?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. So January of 2023, I landed in Oaxaca, Mexico, and a friend of mine, he's our production designer, he makes all of our sets look really cool in LA. He is from that region, and I asked, like, "Hey, Jose, does anyone in your family make mezcal?" But we always joke that it's like someone from outside of mm-hmm. Los Angeles calling someone. It's like, "Hey, man, do you know anyone that makes movies?" It doesn't work like that. It's like the whole town is filmed, right? Mm-hmm. So Oaxaca, it's all mezcal, basically. So he put me in touch with his dad, And I landed in Oaxaca. I met his dad, and then he met me at my hotel. Very lovely gentleman. That no cell phone or anything, just a crumpled piece of paper with three phone numbers. And I was like, okay, this is going to be interesting. So we rented a car, and then off we went into the valleys and sierras of Oaxaca, mm-hmm. Mexico, on a quest generally to find the ultimate maestro mezcalero. And then we called the first number. We got here. We got there. And we tried mezcal. And at that point, everything tasted just like a variation of the same. Mm-hmm. And everything tasted average for us. And then the people were nice folks and all, but no one was outstanding. And everything that Rosa and I do has to be above average, beyond. Yeah, like all of our teams and our productions.
That's
and
why
everything.
Also why you call this one of us, a unique product?
I will get there, because I haven't forgotten the question. I will land there, because okay. It's beautiful once you learn the genesis of this. It leads to how we got to the name, because I remember lost in Oaxaca for a couple of days. I was trying this, trying that, nice people, but nothing was outstanding.
From different maestros?
From different maestros, different mezcalerias and all. And I remember finally I had some reception, and I called Rosa from the side of the road. And I'm like, Rosa, what am I doing here? This is crazy. Like, you know, I mean, this
I'm
is insane.
I'm a filmmaker. What am I looking on a quest to find the Holy Grail?
I'm going to get you drunk and nothing comes.
Exactly, right? I'm just trying this, trying that, and nothing really stands out. And then Rosa says something so beautiful. She said, you know, my love, I've been praying for you. If it's going to be for us, just surrender to the process. If it's going to be for us, if it's meant to be for us, it will find you. If not, just, you know, you've been working hard, enjoy your country, and I'll see you back on Sunday. I'm like, okay. So call the next phone number, and from here, landed to this guy that he sent me the coordinates, and then it's like, okay, I met him.
The coordinate. You can't say I'm going to go down.
Not Avenue 23, yeah. Like, you know. So send me the coordinates, and then I landed at this palenque. Palenque is the proper term of a mezcal distillery, right? Palenque. Okay. So I arrived at this modest palenque, and I met Jacinto Gutierrez, and he became obviously our maestro mezcalero, and you will see his name on the front label of our bottle.
Oh,
and to answer your quick question, yes, he will forever be the only person that makes one of us mezcal, because
he has his own recipe.
100%. And when I met him, he's like, yeah, you want to try mezcal? I'm like, you know what, can we sit down, because I've been driving for a few days, like, let's just chat. And we sat on tree stumps, and we started talking about family values, work mm-hmm. ethics, mm-hmm. and my PhD in mezcal making, yeah, by Google.
I see you.
You know, and then 30 minutes later, he's like, so you want to try mezcal? I'm like, yeah, that's what we're here for. So he poured it in this really beautiful cup, and then say cheers. We actually said Gishbeu. Gishbeu in Zapoteco means for those in the past, the present, and the future. And before we sip, he spilled a little bit of mezcal on the ground. And I said, why do you do that? And then he's like, I always give back to Mother Earth before before I sip.
That's a royal man.
And that spoke volumes to me, right? And I did the same. We said cheers, and I tried it. And Pascal, it was like
Did the skies open? Did the sun come out?
Open,
like in a movie.
Everything went quiet in silent motion. All I heard birds, and it was just exquisite. And I've never tried anything like this. So I'm like, Jacinto, what is this? And then he went to say, like, and we'll get into that part. Why this mezcal is so outstandingly special is because we found the Michael Jordan of mezcal. Right? So, and that goes to say, because in this industry, everybody says, oh, my father make mezcal, my grandfather, my whole family. That makes you authentic. But excellency mm-hmm. is only if ever attained by this divine obsession with perfection. And Jacinto just completely aligned with our vision of how we approach things. Yeah. Like, we don't compromise anything for, like, the sake of anything. And it can drive some people insane, like but that's how you get incredible things that last.
Mm-hmm. That's how you get nominated for a Grammy.
I didn't want to say that, but I guess that's one of the things, right? That's never compromising. Mm-hmm. So
That's how you get a Michelin star in a restaurant.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
You set a goal.
Exactly. And then, and this is why there's cigars, there's watches, there's mm-hmm. there's cars, there's dishes, there's drivers, pilots. We're big in motorsports. So all this, we found that person, that aligned, and then just by two sips, it was just a different experience. So then...
I got to interrupt for 1 second.
Yeah?
Because I didn't know that there are master mezcaleros. As an American, growing up here and then in Southern California, mezcal to me, and I know we're going to talk about this, seemed to be the poor cousin of tequila. Mm-hmm. It was with the worm and all that stuff.
I can't give you more detail on that.
Okay. So I didn't know there was such a person to be found. But it is a tradition that goes back a long time. Should we talk about the difference between mezcal and tequila?
Tequila is actually is mezcal. A little cousin of mezcal. Because tequila is only blue agave.
Right.
Only one.
Mm-hmm.
One type of agave.
And it's supposed to be from a specific region, which is tequila.
But mostly...
You can make it in different states, too.
Mostly mezcal. That's why you need... a master of making
mezcalero,
tequilero.
Or a tequila, right? But
because
you're saying,
it can be made up to 30 different type of agave
mezcal.
So the maestro has to do all these measuring, like we do a good wine.
Right.
We do some blend, we do tasting, we do aging, we do...
So be honest, you had a restaurant for 25 years. You probably mostly featured wine in your restaurant. It's a French restaurant.
Yeah.
So you probably didn't have a lot of hard search. You had some, but you didn't have mezcal.
What?
You didn't have mezcal at Pascal's. Did you serve mezcal?
No, actually, I'm sorry. 30 years ago, nobody would ever talk about mezcal.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That was my point. Yeah.
This is
a hidden gem. This is a hidden story.
No, I'm French, so we're more on the cognac side. But it has some relationship because you distill mezcal.
Yeah, like every spirit. Yeah, right.
But most of the... the tequila is mostly steam, but mezcal is different because there are some burning fire. That's why you get the smokiness.
Let him explain, because I heard him do this, and he tells it well, the difference between tequila, which is now having its moment, famous people making it, suddenly it's come out from behind other goods, and now mezcal's having a moment right behind it. So what's the difference? Explain the differences.
Right before I explain to you, we share with you guys tequila versus mezcal and why mezcal is beautiful. We'll never take away from tequila because tequila is just
clearly,
it's incredible too. And then there's some really incredible. I just recently discovered a couple that I was very surprised because it took me back in like the tequila that I used to drink in the 90s, basically. So, but after we met Jacinto, I came back to the U.S. with some samples. Rosa tried it, found it fabulous. We went to some professional palates, and they're like, wow, what is this? This is incredible. And that gave us the voucher confidence to move forward and start a brand, right? So we were having dinner with one of our attorneys from entertainment side in Beverly Hills in... And he's like, so you guys are starting an alcohol brand? What is that going?
A little crazy, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Because when you start a project like this, one of the first things you think is like, what are we going to call it? Right? What are we going to name it? Mm-hmm. And I remember, you're going to love this, Paul. So we started, Rose and I started working on names. And I'm like, oh, I got it. We wanted to be something that said Rosa and Marco, Marco and Rosa, right? So I came up with it. Calacas and Rosas. Calacas in Spanish means skulls, and Rosas, roses, right?
Right.
So I'm like, oh, this is perfect.
Cause Guns
I'm
and roses.
I'm a rock and roll dude. She's a beautiful flower. So I'm like, okay, great. Calacas and Rosas sounds like Guns and Roses. I'm like, maybe there's something there in the future, right? But, and it's funny because, yeah, Rosa is a classically trained violinist and an opera singer. So, you know, she was like, hell yeah, let's just go rock and roll. But I, fortunately, our trademark attorney was like, yeah, that's not going to fly. And then we spent a few months working on names and everything. And Russ is very pragmatic and disciplined. And she's like, okay, from 5 to 7, we're going to work on names.
Oh, my goodness. That's disciplined. Yeah.
And meanwhile, I'm like, Rosa is just going to find us. It's going to come to us. That's why our company is called Space Brain, you know? So I remember we were having dinner with this, his name is Edu, our attorney. And then he's like, you guys starting a mezcal brand? I'm like, yeah, how's that going? And I said, you know what? Rosa and I, we said, you know what, Edu, Jacinto is such a beautiful human being, our maestro mezcalero. And then Sarah, our director of operations, a beautiful human being. And Roselvia, our controller in Oaxaca, she's a beautiful human being. And you know what? Rosa and I, we consider ourselves beautiful human beings. It's a daily practice of being the best version of ourselves, for each other, and for everyone that we come in contact with. And we're like you, Edu. You're a beautiful human being. You're one of us. Boom. And so
the minute you spoke it, it said, talk to you.
Yeah. And Russ and I, we looked at each other. We're like, check. We got out of there. And driving on the 405, we're like, one of us? Are we going to name a product that's more Mexican than Mexico in English? But we went beyond that. This name really was born describing the beautiful human qualities mm-hmm. of the team involved so far. Yeah, yeah. And that has set the tone for everyone that it comes on board on this project.
So it's like a relationship.
Yes. Everyone that comes on board on this project has and must be a beautiful human being to be part of it.
You know what I hear, though? And I accept your story. You're a storyteller by nature here, and you tell wonderful stories visually and verbally. What I hear when I hear is I hear the opposite. I hear somebody who's an American who knows nothing about this product, whether I went to France and I'm trying something that I can only get there, or I go to Oaxaca to try something, I want to be one of them. I want to, for a moment, feel like I'm one of them.
One
of us. So when you invite me to say, be one of us, that to me is to sample a tradition that goes back a long time.
That's a good image. Yeah,
it is beautiful. And before I pass you the microphone, grant me a minute, because the one most important thing is that Rose has been the architect of the visionary of mm-hmm. this project. We recently learned that for great ideas you need a visionary and an executioner, mm-hmm. right? And that's who we both are. So when Rose said, but it's like, okay, one of us, we committed to it and we started working on the trademarks and everything, that's another story. But she's like, but who is one of us? Who are those people?
Yeah. And what's the backstory?
And then one morning, she was visiting family in Arizona, and then she calls me at 4 a.m., and my phone rings. I'm like, Rosa, I was like, what is it? And she's like, hey, Marco, I got it. She was very emotional. And I'm like, what is it? And she's like, I got the mission statement for the brand. And she's like, Marco, one of us celebrates those who turn obstacles into opportunities, driven by love, respect, and passion for life.
Wow.
And this is our demographic. Yeah. This is our customer. Yeah.
How many brands can say they really have a mission, a story, a purpose, a passion? Or is it just a bunch of people saying, hey, there's an opportunity, I'm going to make some money selling this, and next week I'll sell something else?
You know, I think everything works. This is our story, and
you're sticking to it.
Yeah, we're sticking to it. But no, this is how.
No, I have a picture. You know, you're seeing with a friend or two, and then you have a long evening, and then you say, "Oh, let's have some mezcal," and then you keep on pouring, and then you talk and more stories and more. So. You are one of us right there.
Yeah.
And, you know, and
that. You said something really cool, because there's some Easter eggs in the bottle that you, when you move it here, move it there, you will discover certain things. But one of the things is that our slogan and we just trademarked it. So we just received, like, maybe 3 weeks ago, the certificate. It's ours now. Okay. It's, our slogan is, "What's Your Story?"
Yeah.
So it is embedded in the DNA of the brand.
It's in the bottle.
It's in the bottle, but you have to find it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hold up the bottle for a second. I know you lit it. You put white behind it.
I have to say, you have two different bottles. This is a premium one, or you can...
No, we have, right now, we only have one expression.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we enter the market with this, and right now we're aging in a very unique way that is not yet in the U.S.
Oh, okay.
We're aging our next expression. So it's been in...
I love calling it that, too. It's an it's not just a product. It's not just a version or a variation or a thing or a recipe or a blend. It's an expression.
Yeah. Our next expression...
Once you distill it, I read that you have to let it ferment it for about 14 months?
No. Well, in the case of that next expression we have coming... Yeah. To get that particular certification needs to be 18 months at least.
Okay.
And we're month 22. So we're waiting. Right now we're in a process of raising capital to scale now for the next level. So we'll bottle it. Probably, hopefully, we'll be in the U.S. by spring, summer next year.
If you called the next expression Pascal's Mezcal, I think he might donate some money to the cause here.
Right? we'll call me Chef Pascal as a shareholder.
Or maybe I work for drink.
Right, that's something. All right, we still haven't explained what's the difference between, take us back to this region, tequila and mezcal. What's the difference? For those who've never sampled a mezcal, who've only seen it, the old stuff, when I was a kid, had a worm in it or whatever.
Yeah, I think that just was born from some crazy bikers in Tijuana.
I think so, yeah.
Getting drunk and then just a trudeau there or something. It's because that little worm is actually in our fields. The Jacinto collects these worms, and his wife, Maricela, she desiccates them and turns them into powder, mixes it with vinegar, and this is what he uses as pesticide. But we also, that worm, we make this chili powder, the sal de gusano, we call it, worm salt. And then that little worm, you desiccate it, roast it, turn it into powder, and then spices, little chili pepper powder, lime zest, and you create this incredible flavor that you add and sprinkle on orange.
So add that to your repertoire of spices, Pascal.
Yeah.
You've now got a new worm.
I'm going to bring you some next time.
Yeah, I should put that in my ceviche.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, it's incredible. It's incredible, generally. I'll bring you some. But yeah, tequila and mezcal. So tequila is, like you already mentioned, made from blueberry, agave, and one plant only, right?
And it can be made in there, because I thought it had to be made in a specific region.
Yes, but there's a protected denomination of origin, and where tequila is a city in Jalisco state, right? And then, so initially it was just the state of Jalisco, but now you can make tequila in other states.
And now you have to get the appellation state, it is pure agave.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes
like
it was
champagne
not
in France,
correct?
Yep. You have to be, if it's champagne, it comes from the Champagne region,
correct?
Of France. Yeah, otherwise, it's sparkling
wine or Prosecco. Right. And then for us in mezcal, if I recall, there's 7 or 8 states that have now the denomination of origin. So you can make it in Puebla or Michoacán, I believe Guerrero, and I can't remember, but. We make ours in the motherland of mezcal. We like to say in Santiago Matatlán, Oaxaca, which is like the Mecca for mezcal, or the world capital of mezcal. And tequila made from the blue weber agave, whereas mezcal, there is about 28 different variations of the plant, of the apparently 300 that exist, that you can make mezcal with or from.
But it's like an agave.
Yeah, so just think of it like grapes. You can have different variations of grapes.
Right. So this theory is like a lab, because you have to see how come out the product from one agave to another.
Correct.
And then the your mezcal maker has to do some blending, adjustment.
So we don't like blending because in each plant, each agave, we call it maguey in Oaxaca. So not agave, we call it maguey. But for matters of, you know, educational purposes, let's call it agave. So in each plant has its own qualities. So they cannot all be distilled the same. Some are harder, some are sweeter, some are etc. Some are younger, some are like some agaves take like up to 25 years to be ready for harvest. Our cuiche, we make this from the cuiche plant. The most common mezcal everybody knows is.
Can you describe us what's a cuiche?
Yeah, the most common mezcal everybody knows is called espadín, because that's a plant that takes between 6 to 8 years to grow, and you can cultivate it, right? Whereas the cuiche, you know, the espadín looks like your typical agave, like a ball, you know, with like a ton of leaves, right? The cuiche, however, not only grows wild in the Sierras of Oaxaca, Mexico, like we like truffles, we have to go and find it, but it takes between 10 to 14 years for this plant to be ready for harvest. And it looks like, imagine like a baby palm tree. It looks like little, you know, the bigger, the thicker ones are about, you know, about this thick, right? And yay high, right. different wow. heights. Wow. And this one kind of like grows outside of the land, and it has the spiky leaves, right? So,
and do they grow that in a farm-like environment where it's in rows so they can harvest it easily, or do they literally go out into the wild and find this?
Yeah, there's wild grown.
Like truffles.
Yeah, wild grown.
Amazing.
So
Amazing.
Just go and go find it. And there are farmers that, you know, we work with folks that do this. So, but the beauty about Jacinto is that there's a photo that I will share with you where he's showing me this cuiche agave, and he's explaining to me why this particular one will make great mezcal. Because no tuna fish will make the same tuna fish, you know, sashimi.
Yeah.
So he selects the agave like that. And
like Pascal is picking out mushrooms on the picture behind us here, sniffing them or whatever, or looking at them. That's a good one. No, that's not.
Yeah, when you go to the farmer's market, you pick a tomato and then you pick another tomato and you're like, no, I'm taking this one.
And I smell it too.
And you smell it too, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So it is the same. It is the same approach with agave selection. So
I'm still all right. So different plants,
but
it's a different process too.
Well,
because you're smoking it
there,
for the most part.
There are in mezcal making. I cannot speak for tequila because although I have visited Tequila Jalisco and everything, I'm not an expert in tequila making. And it's a beautiful industry. It's been, you know, it really brought Mexico in the forefront of spirits worldwide.
Yeah.
To this day,
like Irish or Scotch and whiskey.
Yeah, and to this day, tequila still has like a huge position in the market, along with whiskeys and bourbons and above vodkas, etc. Right. So, but for mezcal, there's three ways of making it: ancestral, artisanal, and industrial. Industrial. Needless to mention what is involved.
Big bets.
but ancestral, the key differences is that they are mashed with a mallet, right? And distilled in clay pots. Whereas artisanal, which is the one we make, it is mashed with a traditional taona, which is a gigantic wheel of stone that goes around mashing and separating the fibers.
A donkey?
We had a mule called Carlota, but we retired her because I love her. So she's now just enjoying the prairies. And now we have an electric little tractor that goes around. Yeah.
So that's how you mash it. But how do you get I associate mezcal with a smoky flavor. How does that get imparted?
Well, this is something that is kind of like a fine line and a delicate subject for everybody. Because some people like the smokiness of mezcal, some others don't. ours is crafted not to be heavy smoked, and the, and that comes from like the cooking process, the roasting of the agaves.
And because it's done like in an underground setting, yes. you cover it, and then the smoke, it's slowly cooking underground in like a covered pit or something?
Exactly. So Jacinto, his method is, while it takes some folks to make like, 6-7 days to make a batch, for us it takes us from 4 to 6 days just in the roasting of the agaves. And he employs a very slow cooking method. We like to say, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I always use this analogy, but you're a chef. Imagine that you grab a chicken and you put it at 900 degrees for 15 minutes, and then you have that chicken at 200 degrees for 2 hours. Yeah. One is going to be dry, burnt, and it's going to taste like that, but you cooked it fast.
Yeah.
The other one will take so much longer, but it's going to be juicy and plumpy.
Yes.
So the same approach we use for our roasting, and we use it a traditional underground pit of volcanic rock where we used our family secret recipe.
You do have that.
Hmm?
You do that.
Yeah.
They're not just making this in a vat, a steel vat or something.
Yeah, it's an underground pit, and we'll show you some photos. And because some people's like, yeah, but do you really make it? You will see Rosa actually throwing agaves into the
And then this vault or pit gets covered. This volcanic rock pit gets covered, so the smoke stays within the pit, and that's how you decide how much smoke you're going to get in it.
I wouldn't even use the term smoke. Is very small temperature for a long period of roasting, and then so we don't burn the plant. Therefore, we don't have that smoky flavor.
Not burning up.
And we use a deep well water for fermenting, so we don't use tap water or distilled water or purified water. So our water, because our palenque, our distillery, is sitting on natural water deposits. Mm-hmm. And this is this beautiful water that seeps from the Sierras of Oaxaca, Mexico, loaded with minerals and the richness of the soil. So this is what we get our undernotes of citrusy.
So your the container in the
vault,
soil,
yeah.
bowl, it's like when you have a cast iron pan, you have to season it. So it gets better and better.
Mm-hmm.
More you use it, more flavor is attached to that bowl, no?
To the rocks and everything else here, yeah.
Yes.
There's a flavor.
And this is what gives us our undernotes to complement the flavor of the agave itself. But one of the most beautiful things is that we don't use yeast to kickstart the fermentation, so we use open air fermentation.
Open, so just whatever spores are floating through the air,
whatever,
to start the fermentation.
Well, it's like the ancient way of making wine. The Greeks were making wine like that. You know?
And there's beer that's made that way too in Belgium and stuff here, where it's wild yeast, wild fermentation
because,
in a barn or a vat or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Because you know, first you agave. Are all organic, organically grown. And so if you want to make organic wine on dry farming, something like that, you, like the Greeks, you have to make the wine fermented in a clay vase as well, same thing.
Yeah, we ferment in this gigantic wooden containers. And it's so cool because there's a mosquito in the area that we call them borrachitos. You know, borracho means drunk in Spanish. Yeah, I think everybody knows that one.
Right.
So these borrachitos, these mosquitoes, when they arrive, it's a good sign that the sugar has converted into alcohol. They don't come before. So all this process, and then we move into. Jacinto, he doesn't go by like, okay, leave it there for 3 hours, whatever. No, he just touches the ground. And we like to say that he follows the rhythm of the earth. And it's just what gives this mezcal its beauty. Like he touches the ground. He listens to the fermentation. And sometimes
he watches for the mosquitoes to arrive.
Watches for the borrachitos to arrive, and or our neighbors, you know. So, but
it's ready.
But sometimes he's like, you know what? It's going to be ready at 3 p.m. Wow. Or it's going to be ready at 3 a.m. And at 3 a.m., we're pulling it out and we move into distilling because he believes that if we let it pass a minute longer, it'll sour or it'll affect the flavor and all.
So all of this is not what I associate with mezcal. Growing up, mezcal was industrial. It was made in a vat. It was like an industrial spirit, and you flavor it, and you do things to it, and you take a base alcohol, and then you add some blends and flavors, and suddenly you got mezcal or vodka or bourbon or whatever you want to call it here. What this reminds me of is what Pascal knows better than I do, winemaking. You're talking about undernotes. You're talking about distilling it in a way that's been done for centuries. You're talking about...
Yeah, we don't distill wine, but... I will say our associate that with rum making, because there's sugar cane.
The sort of distillation process in rum.
Very similar.
So, it's very exciting and beautiful because, you know, like I said, there's authentic and then there's excellence. And Jacinto, he's a third-generation maestro mezcalero indeed. He's of a true Zapotec lineage. He speaks Zapotec, right?
And then which is what the local
the language of the region, right? So, and all this is just makes this beautiful project, just the
and
soul.
And he accepted you in. He made you one of us.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, you know what? In this, we like to say that a maestro mezcalero in this region, they make mezcal as a means to support their families, right? And everybody hopes that, you know, brands, what they do is like they purchase mezcal around and dump it all in a container and then bottle it, right? Yeah, yeah. But for us, we believe that mezcal is the true artistic expression of a maestro mezcalero. And someone like Jacinto, who's just an exceptional human being, is just, it will be unfathomable to just mix it with something else. So Rose and I, when we committed to the project, we didn't do this merely as to write a trend or to get into a trend of spirits. We are genuinely safeguarding something so almost sacred and bring Jacinto's expression to the world stage. And we're very excited because...
We need to give him a lot of credit.
I mean, Jacinto is the soul of the spirit.
Does he experiment like on this, not on second fermentation, but on the aging part? Let's see, like a lot of spirit like this, or like a bourbon, aging in
oak
barrel
and, things,
and oak and
Well, here, look, you know, can I stop you for one second?
Yeah.
Because I had a bar for a number of years. One of the things that always surprised me, as the reps would come in and talk about different spirits, whiskey. I'm Irish, so I'm familiar with whiskey and scotch and stuff. Can be aged 20 years or longer, 5 years or 10 years. Tequila is typically only aged 1 year, 2 years, couple of years. So it does not get aged. That's the uniqueness of tequilas. They don't age it for 20 years, generally. So I asked them this. I said, why do tequilas and mezcals not? Rums get aged for 20 years. Bourbons get aged. Scotches get aged. Why not? And he says, it's already been aged. The plant aged it for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our plant took almost up to 14 years to grow. Untouched by humans, basking in the suns of Oaxaca, Mexico, just getting sweeter and juicier. So nature already did. We like to say that nature did all the aging. Our next expression, the one that we're actually aging, that we're maturing, right? We didn't want to do it in barrels because when you do it in barrels, it adds color.
Yeah.
And it adds another flavor to it.
Mm-hmm.
And Jacinto's mezcal is just so exquisite to begin with that we didn't want to mess with that. Mm-hmm. So Sarah, our director of operations, was like, well, there's a method, but it's quite expensive to make it. And Rosa was like, tell me more.
Expensive? Good.
She's like, okay, this is, tell me where it's going. And then I cannot speak about it because it's going to be it's a really cool thing. And but when it comes out, it's like an elevated espadín, and its flavor. We just opened a sample. We got a bottle. We tried it, and it's just fabulous.
All right, we got 10 minutes left. We would be
remiss. We need to do road testing.
We have to taste. Yes. We have to sample. We've come to the sampling part of the afternoon here, ladies and gentlemen. Again, the bottle. Hold on, just highlight it again because it's a really beautiful bottle. Just walk me through some of the aesthetics of the bottle. This ain't just a bottle that you bought off the shelf.
Yeah, real quick, Russ and I, we knew from the beginning that we wanted to design our own bottle, that we wanted to have a custom made bottle, and we were completely delusional because it's just like crazy pricey to just go into this route, but I wanted to explore how a square becomes a circle, and then our bottle manufacturers, they told us,
a square becomes a circle.
And our bottle manufacturers told us, like, hey, we have the best bottle designers. Like, no, we're going to design it ourselves. So I told Rosa, you know what? I'm going to learn 3D modeling, and Rosa went to visit family. And when she came back on a weekend...
This is the kind of obsession that gets you a Grammy. This is the kind of obsession that creates this kind of product. This is the kind of obsession Pascal had for 25 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The way the presentation and the table set and all this.
It's all about that. She came back from seeing family, and I'm like, Rosa, I got it. Look at it. And I showed on the computer the 3D model. And I really made it like the square become a circle.
So the square is at the bottom, and it turns into a circle at the top.
Well, that was my sketch. And Rosa saw it, and she's like, it looks kind of generic.
Ooh.
And I was, you know, she's very Ukrainian and direct. But she's like, what if we do this? And I don't know what we did on the keyboard that it just frenched up the top, and it just created this weird shape. And I'm like, oh, this is ruined. And I was about to close the project. And then she's like, wait, stop. And then you know how you can rotate in 3D?
Yeah.
And then when you see, she says, stop. And when you see this top, it's like when you chop the leaf of the agave,
that's what I was gonna
it leaves say. You this shape,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, that's so beautiful. That's and it. Then we rotated it. And if you see
and
the side.
And the address, it's like a leaf.
The leaf of the plant.
It's pointing, you know?
Yeah.
Except it's not sharp.
Exactly.
Because agave is sharp.
Yeah. And so just like that, our bottle has two of the most intentional, two of the most representative shapes of the plant itself. So it's a very intentional design. And then once we committed to that, we wanted to explore how the top of the topper continued the topper shape. And then our manufacturers, they sent us our first prototype. I'm like, it looks cool, but it's missing something. And then, when you get a Grammy nom, the Recording Academy, they send you this really cool medallion that says Grammy nominee, etc. Yeah. And that was sitting on our desk for some reason. And I was like, what if? And then we just put it on top. And I swear to you, it was like it was made for it. And we measured the medallion.
Born out of a Grammy.
And that inspired to design the medallion. And that medallion...
They're all agave leaves were there.
Yeah. So the top of the shape of the bottle is the shape of each of the petals of the...
Hold it up, point it at the camera, because you're playing with it. We got to see it there. I don't know if we can see any of that there. This looks like a seal, a stamp, a royal decree. Mm-hmm. It has that kind of the king's seal to it here. Yeah.
And we hallmarked the medallion. This is one of the Easter eggs. We hallmarked the medallion with the year of the batch. It's on the rim somewhere in 2024. It's a vintage.
Vintage. You do vintage.
Yeah, it's small batches. It's one batch, one brew, one thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I read that you do each vintage about the same 2,700 bottles or something. Like
so, that? We our 2023-2024 harvest gave us 7,800 bottles, of which 7,200 bottles came to the U.S. and that's it. For the whole country, and we're very, very excited that it is starting to find its way amongst people. So what we're going to do
We're going to reach off camera to the hand of the hand from your hand to the hand of God here. I'm going to sample this.
We're going to do something really cool. What we call, this is our signature, the one of us sipping ritual, right? So
wait, I got to stop again. A million reps came into our bar. None of them said there's a way to drink our liqueur, our liquor. Here, just here's the bottle and sell it and pour it and mix it and whatever else. I go to an event with him, and I start to take it, and immediately he goes, no, stop. There is a ritual
because
to consume this.
First, when you spin one of us mezcal in your glass and you put it to the light, you will see the crown that it leaves, and you will see the very slow dripping legs, because Jacinto, in his distillation process, he retains the essential oils of the plant. And so it has this really nice silky viscosity of the density of the mezcal, right? So what we're going to do is
associate with tequilas or mezcal. I associate a wine.
We're going to take a gentle sip of water to cleanse our palates.
Okay, I have some water over here.
And then we're going to take a gentle sip. Now, provided we profile at 45%. So this is 90 proof, right? And we do this thing called cordón cerrado. Cordón cerrado in Oaxaca, it means, if you translate it, means like closed cord. But basically, like in whiskey world, it's like a barrel strain. Like the way it comes out, that's how you bottle it. So we don't add water after that to increase the volume. And that's why you get diluted products, watered down, et cetera, et cetera. That's why you don't see mezcales behaving like this in a glass. So cordón cerrado, 45%, that's how it came out.
You're saying most mezcal is watered down, so it wouldn't have this viscosity. It wouldn't drip and cling to the glass, right?
Right. So
it lasts. Look at that. It's still there.
Legs, yeah.
Have your first sip. Parade it in your mouth. Let it dance in your tongue.
Parade it. Dance. This guy is in the film business. This is a movie business. Everything is a dance. Everything is an expression.
No, he's also a poet.
Everything's notes and everything here.
He's a poet. He's a project of earth.
So parade it in your mouth. And then once you have a nice mix of saliva and mezcal, pass it gently, because you're going to feel it going down a little strong. It's okay, as you're supposed to. It's a true spirit. We call that the mezcal hug. So just let it hug you.
And that's where, now some people, I'm not going to say burn because that's bad, but you feel that strength of the alcohol there as it goes down. Some people aren't used to that, but this has a immediate flavor to it too.
Yes.
And this isn't just,
well, the flavor will stay in your mouth too.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Yes. And for those who are used to drinking spirits neat, they will find it, you know, very easy to drink and everything. But we like Rosa, she only drinks neat mezcal. She's, can I say a certain word here?
Sure, yeah.
She's a badass.
I've met her. She's outside. She is a badass.
So it's not refrigerated, nothing, just room temperature?
Room temperature. The thing is, like, alcohol evaporates faster than water, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have it warm or room temperature, you may get like strong alcohol notes. If you chill it for a little bit, it condenses the alcohol, and therefore you savor the flavors. So right now,
I didn't know any of that. I didn't know that alcohol evaporates quicker, and that makes sense. If you chill like a wine or something then you're going to.
And also, let me know if I'm wrong, but you're not supposed to smell, get the fume in your nose before you put it in your mouth, because you get more direct taste in your mouth. Because if you,
really?
Especially if it's warm.
Yeah,
especially if it's warm, you're going to get strong alcohol notes.
Yeah.
He's got a process. We're only on step one. There's three more steps or a couple more steps here.
Yeah.
You're jumping ahead of us. Here.
Have your second sip and just repeat. Parade it in your mouth and then pass it gently. Because.
Now, why did it taste less alcohol the second batch? Alcohol to me is that stronger than what some people say, a burning taste or whatever, that it's gentler on the second sip. Why?
Because right now your palate is being primed.
The taste bud.
Your palate is being primed. Your taste buds are flaring up. They're getting used to the
alcohol. They woke up.
They're waking up. On the second sip, this is where the conversation starts with mezcal, right? First, you get the hug. Now you start the conversation, right? It's a relationship. So, and the beautiful part of it is that when you start getting used to sipping spirits neat and in such a way, in such a fine, the finest spirit there is, right? You start learning how to identify the bouquet, the finish, the undernotes, the driving, you know.
You develop an appreciation for what you might have missed.
Exactly. I mean, if you shoot it, you just like, oh, it burns and it just gets you drunk, right?
Right.
But like Rosa says, one of us mezcal is for the quiet luxury, you know, and we're creating what is called the sipping culture. So you really, we live in a world that is just going so fast, Pascal.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
You know, we have to disconnect to connect nowadays. One of us is there.
Which is what Pascal always talked about. I'm sorry, but he had some people came in to work for him. And I said, I didn't have the experience of seeing Pascal in his prime, but it was more than the food. It was the presentation. It was slow down. It was the way when we brought it and how we brought it and how we displayed it and how we...
The production.
The production of it. And and you forced me into a rhythm that wasn't my rhythm. My rhythm is get the food out, I'm going to shove it down, and I'm going to leave, right? And I'm going to turn the table as quickly as I can if I'm a restaurateur. And you're like, no, slow down.
Paul, you need to stop and smell the flowers.
Yeah.
You need to give yourself time to smell the flowers and to savor one of us.
Yeah.
Have your third sip, Pascal and Paul.
Okay.
You don't need to switch or anything. None. Just simply enjoy. The third sip is what we call the charmer. And this is where one of us stays with you. This is where you appreciate the layers and the complexities of the Cuishem Agave, the way Jacinto Gutierrez makes it. So
wonderful.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, and thank you.
How do we find you? How do we get to you? How do we discover this? Is it in, are you in any of the big, are you in the Southern Wines and Spirits of the world? Are you in your own distribution? Or is it just online? Is it in a restaurant? Is it BevMo? I don't know.
We launched February last year, 2025, and then in LA, we're in beautiful places like San Vicente Bungalows, the W Hotel, Damas,
you're
Copa.
In the W Hotel, that's a class. Yeah. That is a place to be.
And
I'll tell you my one quick story. Years ago, I went to my first W Hotel, something we were doing here, and they invited us to go to something. And I got a DJ in the lobby just as you're checking out. So this is a different place.
Oh, yeah, it's so cool.
And they walk into this is their mantra, I think, everyone you go to these exquisite W Hotels. Like, I went to the one in San Diego. And they said, I said, what's this? This is your whatever, whenever. I said, what does that mean? Whatever you want, whenever you want it, we have somebody here to make that happen. More than a concierge, it's a whatever, whenever experience. This would fit in that kind of whatever, whenever environment.
You can find us at the bar of the W in Hollywood. One of my favorite places, Boa Steakhouse on Sunset Boulevard. And here in Orange County, we're at High Time in Costa Mesa.
Is there any place better than High Times that has everything? It's Mecca for alcohol and
it's so beautiful. We had a collaboration with them called, you know, Cigars and Mezcal, and it's my playground. It's just so beautiful to learn. So we're very, very honored to be here in Orange County.
We got to get that guy in here whose name escapes me here.
Yeah.
Who we've talked to everyone. We go to these big food tasting things. They always have a booth there, and the guy who runs their spirits program is there. And yes.
Oh, that would be great.
So you know that you're on the list of product presenter of the Chef, Festival of Chef.
We got to keep you in the mic here.
Festival of Chef, you know? And then on the High Times Cigar is there too. So.
Oh, High Times? We're going to the Festival of Chefs next week.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We'll do a quick reminder to everybody. There's a wonderful woman named Kristen Martin, who Chef knows well, who puts on these very high-end charity auction tastings. you know, like $500 a ticket to get into these things. We yeah. went to one at the Hyatt Regency in Huntington, spectacular, 50, 60, 70 chefs, and all these purveyors showing you the best in the world. We're going to one next week, next Thursday, at the Newport Beach Country Club for KidWorks. They'll raise $500,000 or more, $1 million or whatever during this auction and the tasting and everything else here. It's packed. It's special. It is the world of Grammy producers. It is the best of the best. It is the collection of the people that you that he's referring to.
And a friend from one of us is going to provide me with some Moscow. And
you'll have it at your booth, which is which we talked about a couple of times. We'll give a plug to Azero, which is this farm-raised or ocean-raised
Mexican ocean,
right?
Oh wow!
In Baja, they have a
what would you call it? Full circle, you know?
Azero.
Yeah, Azero.
And and what they do is they take steelhead trout, which I always thought was a separate species. It is a smaller version of salmon that starts in the ocean and swims up the river, native to Southern California, but almost gone in all the streams and rivers, a few here and there. They're taking this and growing it in Baja in that same kind of environment. And Chef is then a brand ambassador and has a booth there.
That's
cool. Serving it in ways I can't. Talk about melt in your mouth. Talk about it isn't. So it's slow cooked. It's not fat. This will fit perfectly.
Perfect. It would be a great match.
All right.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Is there a website?
Yeah.
Any place else you want to go to learn more about?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And we ship nationwide at oneofusmezcal.com.
Okay.
And then, and I don't think we have time, but I need to show you how to pour a little mezcal on your hand and you rub your hand. Yeah. And then you discover, if you discover.
Well, I usually do that on this.
No, just do it like this, Pascal. And pour it like this, and then you rub your hands pretty frenetically, right? By doing this, we're creating heat.
Yeah.
By creating heat, we're evaporating the alcohol. And when you evaporate the alcohol, you expose the true essence of the mezcal. And when you do this, your hands are not sticky. That's why? Right. Because we don't have added sugars. And if you smell your hand, that's the actual smell of the cooked plant.
Wow. There's a way to end it right there.
I used to do that with eau de vie.
Eau de vie?
Pear or a plum eau de vie. It's like a white spirit from pear. And we do the same thing.
And eau de vie.
So the alcohol is gone. And then you smell the fruit.
The fragrance.
Now
the fruit.
We just smell the agave.
And we have discovered that if you leave the glass empty for a few minutes, up to like 30 minutes, you smell it, and it still smells like the mezcal.
But look, the drip's still there.
I know, right?
The legs, like in wine, the legs, the viscosity.
Oh, and the last trick, if you grab the topper and you put it on this big ice cubes, and you put it like this.
Oh, you can.
It will mark.
Oh, that's great.
Like they do in the high-end cocktails. The always have the big square.
The big cube.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a big kick for me to meet you and to bring you in and to expose the world to what I discovered recently. There is premium, prestige, mezcal. There is a new world emerging here that's been there under our noses forever, but we weren't aware of it or exposed to it. He's bringing it to us. And bringing us a product that I can't say enough about here. Spectacular stuff here.
Thanks so much for having me, Pascal.
Thank you, Paul.
This is very special.
And thank you for being a purist.
Merci.
And thank to your maestro to be a purist and your wife.
Yes. Yes. Our logo, the four things are like Jacinto, his wife, Rosa, and me.
Okay.
North, south, east, and west.
Oh, wonderful.
And I'll leave my note to this. In a world of hurry, in a world of Uber Eats, in a world of fast food, in a world of turn the restaurant table over multiple times because we got to make more money, the idea of slowing down, slow cooking, slow eating, slow processing, slow sipping, that is a desperately needed world. We all need, that's the experience that we all crave, to slow down and connect in a world that's going faster and faster with less and less opportunity
and then
to savor.
We're looking at that ball, you can have many good moments.
Yeah, as you
with
find
one of us.
The little Easter eggs.
You can have a ton of great moments with one of us. Yeah, what you describe is quiet luxury. Yeah.
It is, quiet luxury. That's their brand here. Well, that's the epitome of it. Again, if you want to see a little expression of it, come to the Festival of Chefs, if you can still get tickets there, at the Newport Beach Country Club on July 23rd, I think. It's Thursday this year. Yeah. Usually it's Sunday. And Chef Pascal will be there with the spectacular Azero salmon or steelhead trout, and he'll have some of this in the booth, so you want to savor it and match it. I want to see what Chef Pascal, now that he's been exposed to it, can create to complement it.
Well, yeah, I do have some pink salt from Peru that will go well with the salmon, and all these really things from the original product, you know. So it's from one of the upper lake of Peru, and produce and salmon.
He can see it. He can picture it. Oh, I'm going to have to taste it. I have to. I can't visualize these things. I have to taste it and go, oh, that's pretty darn good. Thank you again. Name of the brand is?
One of Us.
And Mezcal. The website is?
Oneofusmezcal.com.
Okay. Look for it.
And I can't wait for one of you to test it.
There you go.
That's so cool.
All right, we went a bit over, but why not? We could sit here all afternoon and waft and share stories and come up with different ways to describe what we're experiencing here. All that behind the kitchen doors, that's what goes on with these chefs and restaurants as they experience and experiment with ingredients that many of us have never sampled or touched before here. All that more is why you got to come back to Orange County's only community radio station, where we share these stories right here from our studio here at University of California, Irvine's Beale Applied Innovation Center.